Back in June, we reported the launch of the Nuclear Spectroscopic Telescope Array, or NuSTAR for short, a new space-based X-ray telescope, which will be able to observe some of the most violent and energetic objects in the universe, including black holes and active galactic nuclei. This month, we're joined by Professor Andy Fabian of the Institute of Astronomy in Cambridge, who is a collaborator on the project. Andy, I gather that NuSTAR can measure higher energy X-rays than previous X-ray telescopes. What exactly does that mean?
What it means is it has focusing X-ray telescopes which work over an energy range which goes about 10 times higher than has previously occurred. And that's because the mirrors are made in a special way. The surface coating is made out of lots of thin layers of heavy metal and carbon. And that way there's what's called interference, which enables the focusing to work at much higher energies.
And these are photons with energies of thousands of times visible light photons.
That's right. These go from thousands to tens of thousands. And they're close to the kind of X-rays you get when you go to the dentist and have an X-ray.
So what kind of astronomical objects produce these very energetic photons?
It tends to be things like matter falling into black holes. So from the matter swirling around black holes. From energetic jets that come out from that sort of process, pulsars, exploding stars, that kind of thing.
So we're talking about relatively rare events. Rather than looking at visible light, which is constantly pouring out of all of these things, we're looking at quite rare and discrete events that can perhaps tell us a very different story of the universe.
Yes, the visible universe is mainly powered by nuclear power. Centres of the sun, for example, nuclear fusion. What we're looking at here is gravitational power, where you're getting matter falling down into the deepest potential wells in the universe, namely black holes, and they tend to produce these high-energy emissions.
So does that mean if I would have X-ray eyes and I would look at the sky in X-rays, I would see a very different picture?
Yes. Of course, if you had X-ray eyes and you're at the bottom of our atmosphere, you wouldn't see anything at all. It's not that you would look at me and see a skeleton. It just wouldn't see anything at all because the X-rays are absorbed by the air. But if you were above the atmosphere and were able to put on these X-ray glasses, you would find the universe would look very different. Some of the brightest stars in the sky, like Betelgeuse in Orion, is completely undetected in X-rays. And yet there would be objects like the Crab Nebula, the Crab Pulsar, would be very bright.
And I guess the sky would be much more variable with these violent and sudden events happening.
Indeed, even the ones that are fairly steady and persistent also would flicker. So if you were to make a planetarium that were an X-ray planetarium, you couldn't do it with just constant lights. You'd have to have quite a lot of them twinkling away.
So would it just be point sources of light, or are there nebulae in X-ray astronomy as well as invisible?
There are nebulae in the sort of main X-ray band, which is where we've been working mostly before. Then we can see the gas between the galaxies, particularly in clusters of galaxies. They're glowing. But when you go to the NuSTAR band, they tend to disappear. What you see then are there are few nebulae around, like the Crab Nebula, where a rapidly spinning object, say a pulsar, actually has produced a wind of very energetic particles, which causes a glow over an extended region. So that kind of thing will be observed as well.
Now, in terms of astrophysics, what can we learn scientifically about these objects?
Well, we can learn, because we're seeing the complete spectrum of them, we can learn a lot there. With regard to exploding stars, we can look at radioactive elements. You can actually see the characteristic X-ray lines they produce. You can work out how they're powered by radioactivity, which is what actually causes them to glow for a while after their formation. Also, with NuSTAR, we can look through absorbing material. And so you can have as much material as, say, you would get in a paperback book in front of you, but the X-rays can go through that. And quite a lot of the massive black holes in the universe are lurking behind this kind of absorption, this kind of gas. And so we don't really have a good census of the massive black holes in the universe. And there's something called the X-ray background, which was discovered in the first X-ray rocket flight back in 1962, 50 years ago, that peaks at, we call it 30 kV, a particular energy. And we haven't yet found the objects which give rise to that background. And hopefully New Star will solve that problem.
You've mentioned a little bit of the history there. How has X-ray astronomy evolved throughout the last sort of 50 years?
Well, it started off with a rocket flight by Riccardo Giacconi and his colleagues. He won the Nobel Prize 10 years or so ago, 50 years ago, this last summer. This rocket flight just went up and down, and they had Geiger counters on it, which detected X-rays. And with that, they discovered SCOEX-1, which is the brightest persistent X-ray source in the sky, and they also detected a whole background of X-rays. X-ray astronomy then went on for the next nearly 10 years with rocket flights, and I, as a student, had a couple of rocket flights, and then there was the first X-ray satellite launch, namely a satellite with X-ray detectors on, and that was called Uhuru. That's Swahili for freedom, because it was launched from Kenya, actually, because they wanted to launch as close as possible to the equator. So they used an oil platform off Kenya to launch it. And that was extremely successful and discovered many of these X-ray sources in our galaxy, X-rays from clusters of galaxies and other things.
So it's actually a very young type of observation.
Absolutely, yes. And in terms of orders of magnitude of sensitivity improvement, it's gone almost as many as the optical band has gone, only it's done it in 50 years rather than 500 years.
So what's been the driver there? Has it been having the technology to do it, or has it been advances in the scientific theory that has then told us where to look and how to look?
Well, a combination of all those things. I mean, being able to have telescopes has been enormously important. And it turned out that in the 50s, a man called Walter, in wanting to make an X-ray microscope, had solved how you focus X-rays. And it's done in a similar way to an ordinary optical telescope, using a parabolic mirror, excepting you can't have it face on. You've got to use the outer part of the parabola. We use what's called grazing incidence reflection. X-rays tend to be absorbed if they go straight at something, but if they come in at a glancing angle, then they can bounce off. And the good analogy for this is skimming a stone on a lake. We've all done that. And if you get the angle right, it bounces. But if you make the angle too steep, it gets absorbed. And that's exactly the same for X-rays. And as you go up in energy, the X-ray energy, so this angle has to be even more glancing, has to be smaller and smaller. And generally, we've not been able to go above 10 keV. The big breakthrough with New Star is using these special interference-type optics. You can now go a factor of 10 higher and still get decent angles of incidence for the X-rays.
Now, New Star is a quite incredible shape. It's got the optics on one end of a 10-metre mast.
Yes.
And then the receivers at the other end of that mast, which is about the height of a house. I guess that's to do with this problem of focusing the X-rays.
Yeah, although Chandra, XMM, the satellites, the orbiting observatories have been there for more than 10 years, they also have 10-metre type focal length. And so the way X-ray telescopes work is, as you describe it, you go along and you have the mirrors and you get the reflection there. And then they, as it were, almost go through the mirrors, and 10 meters further down, they go on to the detectors.
So because it's a glancing impact with
Correct.
That mirror, you can't have very powerful lenses.
Correct, yeah. And indeed, you can't have lenses at all, just to stress that, because a lens would absorb the X-rays. You can only work with mirrors in the X-ray band. But the interesting thing with New Star was, unlike the other ones, New Star was launched with everything folded together. It was a Pegasus launch, as they say, in a small rocket that was slung horizontally under a large jet. Again, they want to launch as close to the equator as possible. That's because the particle background in orbit is low. And it was launched from an atoll west of Hawaii, and you always launch these things to the east to make use of the spin of the Earth. And so launched horizontally, and then when it's away from the plane, they then light the motors, automatically, of course, and it roars off and gets into orbit. So this very compact satellite was launched like that, and then it was sort of wound out. There's a nice little video you can find on the web of the mirrors moving out as the whole structure, there's like a very folded up Meccano-like structure that unwinds to make the 10-metre optical bench, as we call it, to space the mirrors away from the detector.
Now, that, I think, was back in June. What's the state of the telescope now? Is it taking scientific data?
Oh, yes, yes. I was on a telecon to do with it last night, and everything's looking really good. It's had over 100 days in orbit, and now it's doing regular observations. And I can't tell you all in detail about the observations, but it's really working very well. The background is very low. The imaging is superb, and the spectra are very exciting.